Brendan Devaney's taking a seat here now for our preview of the DL debate. Hi, Brendan. What's the crack? Good to have you on board.
Yeah, nice to be back.
Are you all right?
Yeah. It's where we got a week off. Oshin was filling in for me there, so...
He did all right, didn't he? Yeah, I mean, wouldn't want him in full time, but he didn't do too bad.
Yeah, listen, as an understudy,
he's getting his
bad.
Start. It's nice that you're giving him his start, I think, in fairness. Yeah.
Better be careful, he's not too far away.
I know. Donegal versus Dublin.
Yes.
I think this is the third, fourth year in a row in the quarterfinals. What do you make of it?
Yeah, listen, massive games. A game that we wouldn't, as Donegal fans, seen coming, Greg, with the season we had, of course, relegated and going into the championship with not much hope. But slowly, this team has pulled together. The younger ladies have really started to find form. And of course, we got some of our more experienced players back, and everyone has gelled together. And listen, Meath, the All Ireland champions, were put to the sword at the weekend. And listen, it's been a phenomenal turnaround for Donegal. I suppose the senior players coming back, they weren't just some of the best players Donegal had, they were some of the best players in Ireland, and they've just fitted in. So the team had to try and manage it out, and it was a really tough league for them. You know, them youngers, they were heavily beaten in a lot of games. It could have went either way. Listen, talking to Maxie a few times, he didn't seem to give anything away about definitely these players were coming back. As if the doors left open, maybe it wasn't really decided, but slowly, as the experienced ladies have come back, and now we're right in the mix again. We're doing.
It's knockout football now, and if you want to beat the best, you have to beat the best.
Yeah, it's going to be in the 15th or 16th of July now. Greg, so listen, this is a massive opportunity again for Donegal. I mean, if you can beat Meath, they're the reigning champions. There's no reason why you can't go on and win the competition. Now, I know, obviously, Mikey's not going to be looking any further past than the Dubs there, one of the standard bear teams every season. But certainly, there's nothing to fear for this Donegal team. And maybe the youth now coming through will give Donegal that extra.
We have home advantage in that quarterfinal, don't we?
Yeah, I haven't seen where it's actually going to be played.
No,
I would imagine
that's
it's neutral,
decided.
Is it?
I thought it was a home tie, but anyway, we'll see.
Right, I haven't seen the actual venue. Yeah, Derek, I've just seen the date.
All right.
You could be right. It is at home.
I was right once before.
Yeah, listen, you're doing your due diligence. That's me being on the continent, you know. I'm catching up.
Come here. You have Maxie Curran and also Maureen O'Donnell. Obviously, Maxie's in manager mode.
Yes.
I think we'll get a good insight from him, don't get me wrong. But I think you'll be able to tease out a wee bit more where we were, where we come from, and where we're going with Maureen O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously what she knows and she'll bring to the party.
And listen, when you're a manager, you have to, I suppose, give the... To the party line, for want of a better word.
It,
and that's understandable, of course, and you can only... But then, you know, if you go to an ex-player there, you can get a bit deeper into the tactics and where they're at and that. So Mo will bring us up to speed. But listen, hats off. I mean, fair play to them. You know, in a time when things was looking really bad in Donegal GA for so many reasons, you know, the hurlers, of course, you know, made the Nicky Ragger final. Our footballers looked like it was a write-off season. They come back now. I know we had a bad defeat to Tyrone, but in terms of all we went through, they certainly steadied the ship and put a wee bit of pride back in Donegal. And now the ladies are on the a game away from an All-Ireland semi-final. And so things always turn, Greg. You know, you got to stay positive, I suppose, even in the tough times. It can be hard to see that at times, Greg. You know, particularly, I think, in the men's game there too, it was hard to see, you know, how we were going to, you know, come out of that group. But yet we ended up coming second, and so listen, things will always turn. But fair play to the ladies, they're flying the flag now.
Yeah, all right, Maxie and Maureen on the show this evening. Now we had four games over the weekend. Two were on pay per view, two were on RTE. The two good ones, I think, were on the pay per view. GAA Go. The Kerry Tyrone game was an interesting one because I think Kerry went in at half time 3 points up. It didn't look like Tyrone were out of the game. But then, I don't know, it was just an amazing second half of football from Kerry. Tactically, they seemed to be able to change. They played this game very different to the previous game.
Yeah.
And they just seemed to be able to adjust and change on the hoof, and just some amazing players. And I kind of felt for Tyrone. I think Kerry gave them a few points, really, if the truth be told.
They did a job on them. I suppose that's the thing. Kerry are missing, and there's a bit of history between Kerry and Tyrone, where Tyrone got about Kerry they're the aristocrats of the game. They were the always the team to beat, and they played the game a certain way. So you had to ruffle them. So I think now what Kerry have learnt over the years that we can't, that we have to turn that on you. Obviously, Paddy Talley, Northern coach coming down there, a lot of emphasis on the tackle and the shape. And if you look at the game, if you look at the game and look at the Dublin game as well, the way the second half, I think Dublin had 1-7 without reply. Kerry maybe had about 1-5 or 1-6 to a point or something, and just blew the other team away. And what happens is then, like, because they're tactically well set up, they can just sit then and boss the game. And it's very different to a team, you know, other teams that are playing counter attack. When they break, they haven't got this ability. You know, you look at that Dublin team, and then when they on their bench come on, the same with Kerry, when they're breaking into space, you're in trouble. So if they've learned to sit in tight and they get in a lead, and both teams played the game similar at half time, there didn't look like there was a lot in it, and then he just blew the team away. Yeah. And then they sit and they control the game, and it was a real marker weekend for Kerry and Tyrone, just to say, listen, we're here. They're definitely the best two teams in Ireland by some way.
Yeah, I don't think really we can read anything into where Donegal's at, given the fact that Tyrone beat Donegal and then Kerry beat Tyrone. I mean, I'm sure that was
Monaghan beat Armagh.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a lot of the conversations. But they're different games and different scenarios. What about the Monaghan Armagh game? 14 points apiece at full time, low scoring extra time, and then the dreaded penalties to settle our national sport when penalties. Well, I mean, there's no point going over that again, is there? Yeah. I was pleased to see Monaghan get one over in Armagh, not going to lie.
Yeah, were you?
You weren't?
Yeah, I try and stay impartial. Just
I don't. Stop that. Come on, Monaghan.
Well, how about this? I don't like either of the boys.
I can't say that.
No, listen, I have a cousin playing for Monaghan.
In sporting terms, we're talking.
No, I have Monaghan ties, so I definitely stick with the Monaghan guys. Listen, we were supporting them. Yes, we haven't got a great history with Armagh there down through the years, Greg. So, but listen, say penalties tough again. Armagh, 3 penalty shootouts in a row, Greg. I was just thinking about Armagh. We're coming down the road in the car there from the boat, and I was thinking to myself, if they'd have won them penalty shootouts, they were in an All-Ireland semi-final last year. They're also champions this year, and they're in an All-Ireland semi-final again. Now, in your footballer in life, Greg, that completely changes everything that those players do. Those players now basically with McGinney 10 years now, and that would have been like the culmination of all their work, but yet the three things that have basically changed their footballer in life in many ways comes down to penalty shootouts. And listen, the same lad missing the two penals, that's a tough thing to be hanging on him, Greg. But I don't think anybody really faults people for that, Greg. I think, you know, there were some expert penalties in that, by the way. You know, people keeping their cool. Vinnie Corey said after the game, the Monaghan manager, we don't practice penalties, you know. So it just shows you, you know, sometimes maybe you're better off, maybe you're not. It's hard to know. Well, I would always think you should practice.
Some of them probably have a bit of a soccer background as well, maybe, down the line. It's just when you think of an entire season, all the training and all the stuff we don't see that goes into it, all the games, all the highs and the lows and the heartbreak, for it to end on spot kicks.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it just does not do those players justice.
No, it's really harsh, isn't it? And possibly as well, I think because it is the way it is and it's just here to stay, I don't think Armagh are like overly concerned. I think Armagh had a couple of chances to hit goals.
They'll look at what went wrong during the play.
Armagh probably have more tools to beat teams than Monaghan do.
Yeah.
You know, but they play so cautious, and they play in this real game that will try and beat you by a point. And it's such a dangerous game because, you see, they got up that point. The game plan was basically almost worked in terms of that kick, brilliant kick of Rian O'Neill. Up steps the man himself, Conor McManus, who of course hits two penalties expertly in the shootout too, but you just think from Armagh's perspective, they had a went for the game a bit more, and we've been saying that about them all season. Mm-hmm. They haven't been going for games, they've been playing. I mean, even yesterday, the next spare defender, and they dropped a half forward, put in a half back, and you're thinking, right, they just want to go Monaghan, right, we're going to eke out a point victory, and there's the dangers of it, Greg. It goes to a draw and you go out in penalties.
Back to the Northwest. I mean, Derry couldn't have taken Cork for granted. They did the job though, 1-12 to 1-8.
Yeah, similar again, Greg, as the Kerry and Dublin game, did all the damage just at the start of the second half and then completely controlled it. And you just feel sorry for Cork coming into the Derry forward line, Derry defence then. You just don't think you have the skills. And if you look at Mayo, you actually, like, it was a bit cringeworthy to watch. I'm looking at Mayo, nobody has playmaker ability in that Mayo team. Mayo need space to play, or they can't play. They need a game to be end to end, or they're in trouble. And you've seen jobs being done in this season, like Roscommon did a job in them. And once Dublin found their shape and their rhythm, they sucked them in. And in many ways, Derry did that to Cork. Then they're breaking into space. Probably could have beat them by a bit more, but it's a huge ask in the semi-final now, you know.
Well, I mean, can you see anything other than a Kerry Dublin final?
Nah. And there's been shocks all year, and you'd think.
So that's Kerry, Derry, and Dublin Monaghan, by the way.
Monaghan, listen, like, we took Monaghan apart at times up in Healy Park, you know. And listen, we're obviously there's a new team forming there. But certainly I can't believe that Monaghan side now is in a semi, and they think that they could take on, a team like Dublin is a huge stretch. Whatever chance, I think there may be a bit of chance with the Derry if they can hang in the game against Kerry. Mm. But then again, the way Kerry and Dublin played the last day, but we've seen it all year in the Championship. Don't judge a team on its last game, you know. But certainly it's Croke Park now, it's Dublin and Kerry. And if you look at the All-Ireland semi-final last year, you know, come back to that unbelievable kick from Sean O'Shea. And it looks like with Dublin this year, they're saying, right, we have to win this All-Ireland. You know, Desi Farrell, if you look at it, comes in his first All-Ireland, year one's All-Ireland, and they've lost the next couple of seasons, and the question marks are hanging over him. So should he win another one? I think, you know, he can leave two All-Irelands in 4 years. Not bad.
Not
but should he
bad
lose
return.
It, they'll say that, listen, that first one was in the back of the Jim Gavin era, and you haven't been able to put things right. So I think this year with the lads coming back, you know, Cluxon, McCaffrey, Mannion, and you've seen them particularly come on, the subs, Small coming on yesterday, Kieran Kilkenny. Those players, particularly Mannion, McCaffrey, Cluxon, they weren't playing last year against Kerry. And Conor Killahan was injured. Now, they're four of Dublin's best players. And if you look at it now, they're back in that team and they're back in the groove. So at this point, you know, if you put that against last year, they would have beaten Kerry. So certainly I would put Dublin as slight favourite.
What can Derry do when you see what Kerry did to Tyrone, like, and then you saw the kind of game Derry had with Cork, what can Derry do? You can't contain Kerry, can you? Or what can tactically they do? They can't take them on and they can't keep them out. So what do you do?
Well, they are good at snuffing out teams, Greg. If you think
Kerry
back, even
so good,
they are, yeah. If you think back, I suppose that league game against Dublin, remember the Division 2 final, they did in the first half really snuff them out, and Dublin did open them up for goals in the second half. So listen, they're always improving. Of course, Kieran McFaul in there, Lachlan Murray fellas, I guess they are a bit better than last year. But you just look at the way the two sides played at the weekend. If they play like that, listen, it's a Derry. What's going to happen is you're going to have a performance drop from Kerry and Derry to play at their absolute best to make this a game. So there's possibilities there. I mean, Conley Gilligan will be on this evening, but he's of course an ex-Derry star. And
Kieran Whelan.
Kieran Whelan, of course, yeah. On to talk about the Dubs and what he sees. He'll be on the Sunday game regular. Good lads to give us opinions. So it'll be interesting to see what they see.
Right, okay. So we've got Dublin legend Kieran Whelan, former Derry star Conley Gilligan on the All-Ireland series over the weekend that we've just been discussing. Then we mentioned earlier on Maxi Corran, the Donegal ladies manager, and of course also Maureen O'Donnell talking about the victory over Meath and what we need to do heading into that game with Dublin. Anything else? Is that it? That's plenty
that
there.
Keep,
like.
We'll cram that in there, Greg. Yeah.
I was going to say, Bren, thanks very much indeed.
Appreciate it.
Great to have you back. All right, Brendan Devaney there. The DL debate is on after 7, and it's supported by
Sister Sarah's. Our kitchen. Excellent restaurant and a great place to be. Yeah, come down, visit us.
All right, back after the break. Breaking news, because on Garda Síochána O'Connor are continuing to investigate all the circumstances of an alleged assault that is reported to have occurred in the Sleaford Killybegs area between Saturday the 24th and Sunday the 25th of June. Well, earlier this morning, Gardaí, with the assistance of the Coast Guard, recovered a body from the water at Sleaford. The remains have since been removed from the scene and taken to Letterkenny University Hospital. The state pathologist has been notified and a post-mortem will take place in due course. Now, an incident room has been established at Ballyshannon Garda Station under the direction of a senior investigating officer. So they're continuing to put out the appeal that you've been hearing for the last number of days, but the obviously major development in that story is that a body has been recovered from the water at Sleaford. So I'd imagine we'll get an update on the status and direction of that investigation, if not today, certainly tomorrow. And they were waiting for such a discovery, I think, before they could formally suggest in which direction that investigation was going. But just to confirm, a body has been recovered from the water at Schlieve League. The body's been removed to Letterkenny University Hospital and for a post-mortem, I believe. And as I say, I'm sure now we'll get an update from Gardaí on the direction of that investigation in the very near future. Right, Aldi has dropped its milk prices just hours after Lidl. It's the second price decrease in as many months for the two supermarket giants. A 10% drop in the price of Lidl's own brand milk products come into effect this morning. Now, it's their own brand, but they aren't making it. They're paying someone for it. So the big question is really, it sounds like, you know, the supermarkets are doing a great thing for us, which, you know, if you're looking to save any penny we can, it is good news. But who's picking up the bill? Let's see if Keith O'Boyle, chair of the Irish Farmers Association Liquid Milk Committee, has an insight into this. Hi, Keith. Thanks for joining us.
Right, how are you?
I am good. I'm good. So who's going to pick up the tab for this great PR for these companies? Milk coming down 10 cents, seemingly almost right across the board.
Yeah, we all know who picks up the tab, because the one that picks up the tab has always picked up the tab, and that's ultimately the farmer. You know, the retailers will spin their jargon and say that they're taking the hits, but they don't, because ultimately it comes back to the farmer every time. We know this. It has happened for the last 10 years. We've taken up the slack, so it's not going to be any different this time.
Does that happen directly? Do they come to you and say, we're dropping it 10 cents, so we're going to give you less 10 cent less, or do they get it out of the farmers down the line? How does that process work?
So basically what happens is I sell my milk to a processor. So there's five or six main processors in the country that supply the milk to the supermarkets. And the processor goes into tendering, and it's the best price that wins. And the certain discounters would be very heavy-handed on their tendering, and they pitch the one off the other, and it's whoever's the best price. But ultimately, the farmer then is left picking up the pieces, because that's what's left over for us, which is usually always a problem. There's not enough.
So are farmers in this space also price takers? In other words, the processors come back to you and say, look, we've just negotiated our new deal, and unfortunately we can now give you such and such rather than such and such. Is that how it works? I know it's probably more complex in the ins and outs of it, but that is that the nuts and bolts?
That's the nuts and bolts of it. So basically, ultimately, you see, where it's coming from, the global milk price for the last 6 months has dropped considerably. But unfortunately, liquid milk is the milk that we buy off the shelf 365 days a year. So to be a liquid milk, there's only 1,300 liquid milk suppliers left in this country, because each and every one of them have dropped off, sold their contracts and got out of it because it's not viable. Because what will happen is exactly what you said. The retailer will push, then the processor comes back and says, lads, this is what's left. And ultimately, with the price, the input costs associated, so to make it clear, to keep milk supplied in your shelves for the winter, we have to have cows calving in the autumn of the year. So by doing this, we have to feed high concentrate levels to keep the milk flowing all year round, which is a higher cost. Obviously, cows can't be out on pasture for Christmas and whatnot, so they have to be indoors on a higher feed and higher costs. But unfortunately, nobody can seem to understand this. I have personally myself over the last 3 years spoken to retailers, spoken and highlighted the difference in these two systems, but nobody wants to listen. And the fear we would have now is, are they gone too far? Are they going to keep? You know, you talk about price wars. Well, this is exactly what it is. They keep cutting the price, and we're the ones left to pick up the slack. And it can't last much longer. Let's be honest, the cost. And I appreciate the cost of living is extremely high, because, you know, I have that cost of living as well as a.
But can I just say on that point, Keith, at the end of the day, there is very strong indications that some retailers are profit gouging, that inflation is artificially high because profits are higher, right? You know, so, I mean, it is, you know, it is possible that these businesses could take the hit, that they could absorb these cuts, but they're not. They're going to pass them down the line from processors down to farmers.
I would 100% agree, and I would be, as a consumer myself, rearing a family, would be delighted. But that doesn't happen. we have seen this happen, that they keep dropping down the prices and it's left to us. And yeah, there is, and there probably is. I would agree there is price gouging. But unfortunately, I can guarantee you there will be nobody's basket or shopping will be any cheaper next Friday than it was last Friday, because where they might have taken 10 cent a litre or 10 cent for 2 litres, which is only 5 cent a litre, they're using it as
it's a staple.
And 5 cent a litre, even if these retailers have to take that hit, it doesn't mean anything to them. 5 cent a litre is an awful lot of money to a dairy farmer. And that's what the problem
scale,
is. And
it?
You have to remember, like, in all the dairy farmers in the Republic of Ireland, there's only 1,300 registered liquid milk farmers. That's all that's left. Every year we get a drop off, every year without fail. And it's deemed an old man's game. Why is it deemed an old man's game? It's deemed an old man's game because the youth don't want to do it because there's no profit in it.
Is it also a big boy's game too? And pardon my ignorance because I'm not a farmer, Keith, but I do know there's a lot of dairy farmers that are buying up land because of the amount of cattle per acre or whatever it might be. So does that mean that we could end up really a consolidation of milk production in that, you know, the bigger the boys, the more resources they have?
What has happened is, you know, we pride ourselves on the family farm in Ireland, and that's what helps us all over the world, family farming, and which is our selling point for Kerrygold butter in the US. It's family farming, which is deemed, you know, 80, 90, 100 cows, and that's family farming. But unfortunately, with what all these new restrictions that's coming upon dairy farmers in full, with derogations and whatnot, and it's leaving it in a way that it's going to have to be the survival of the fittest. And there's probably a little bit more leverage with the bigger lads to leverage it up and be buy or lease or rent more land, and which is creating the price of land to be extortionately high now, which is another major problem. But like last Friday, we, you know, it all came where derogations, which is, it's your stocking rate per farm is going to be cut. And like every dairy farmer and farmers across the board are working very hard towards trying to be, obviously we have to be environmentally friendly and we all are, but we're doing the work, but we really need the science to work. And we're not given time. And it's just creating that, exactly what you're saying. Farmers running out competing with one another to get land, to try and hold the number of cows that they have just to stay viable. Because let's remember, if you have to cut back your cows, that means you're cutting back your income.
And so you buy more land to maintain your stock. Can I ask one other question, Keith? What is the future? Is it to whittle the industry down? Like, in other words, you talk about there being 1,300 milk producers in this country. I beg your pardon, Keith. Is it a case that they're trying to get it down to a certain level that will be able to supply our liquid milk requirements in this country, or could it get to a point where we're importing milk? Just pardon the ignorance, but I think it's not something that's often discussed because everyone presumes everybody knows. So are we over supplying liquid milk at this time, or are we getting to a point whereby we might have to import to meet the needs if it became completely unviable to produce liquid milk?
So, yes, we actually aren't. We are not oversupplying liquid milk for 12 months of the year. There is a period for December, January and coming into February that we actually only just have about enough milk. There is a pinch point definitely around Christmas and first 2 weeks of January where it's questionable, have we even enough last Christmas? So going forward, it would be very, I would estimate, so I would think that going forward, we will have to import milk to keep our own supply for 12 months. So I'm meaning in the December, January time of the year where lots of guys dry off all their cows. They take 6-8 weeks off and they calf their cows in middle of January, early February, go to grass and take all the milk off grass and run a very low cost, lot lower cost system than having a calf and a cow and making up for the winter.
All right, okay.
That's your question.
Yeah.
Yes, it is very likely that we will not have enough milk. We will have to import milk going forward if this keeps going.
How is that environmentally friendly?
Of course it's not. Mm. Not at all. But we don't seem to think that far ahead.
It's just contradictory. It's contradictory.
We let things go before we realise it's gone, and that's what has to be. And, you know, we can keep going on and we can hear, the farmers are crying again. It's justified. This is the thing. It is justified why we're crying again. And there's a lot of farmers who wouldn't even dream of supplying milk 365 days a year. You have to remember, to supply milk 365 days a year, you have to be milking your cows Christmas morning, and even worse than Christmas evening, when everybody else is sitting in after having their dinner, we have to turn around and go milking cows. But we do that, and we do it, but we have to get paid to do it. And that is the key to it.
Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Take care of yourself. That is Keith O'Boyle there. He's the chair of the Irish Farmers Association Liquid Milk Committee. Just to confirm that breaking news that we brought to you just before that item, that Angadashi Akana investigating an alleged assault in the Sleevely Killybegs area on the weekend of the 24th and 25th of June. Well, a body has now been recovered from water at Sleevely. It's been removed to Letterkenny University Hospital. The state pathologist is en route to for a post-mortem, and I imagine once that post-mortem is concluded, we'll get a clearer picture of the direction of that investigation. A listener says, hi, Greg, we're getting 37 pence. Sorry, I beg your pardon. We're getting 37 cent per litre for our milk. It costs 1.20 per litre in the shop. We're just hanging on by a thread. Four children to rear and a mortgage, plus the massive cost of living. Farmers won't be able to stick this much longer. So 37 cent per litre of milk to the farmer, and it's 120 cent per litre in the shop. A caller says, on the AI matter, ChatGPT was able to write a convincing CV for a 16-year-old. ChatGPT won't replace people, but people who use the AI will go further than people who don't use AI. Well, using AI might get you in the door with a good CV, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you won't get found out once you're in the business. So I don't know. It's interesting. Not contradicting you, but there's a couple of ways to look at it. Right. Amanda Boyle is Childcare Development Officer with the Donegal County Childcare Committee. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you on the show. Right. OK.
Thank you.
Talk to us about this information and recruitment event that's taking place shortly.
So, Greg, we have, as you said, an information and recruitment event happening in Letterkenny. It's coming up on the 12th of July. So really what it is, it's for an event for the earlier sector across the whole county of Donegal. And so we're looking to attract early learning and care services, childcare services, any early years educators that are seeking employment, childminders, and earlier students. So any of those people and, you know, members of the public who just want to find out maybe a wee bit more or interested in a career in early years, we should be able to have information available for people like that as well. So it's just to support recruitment across Donegal in the earlier sector.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously we're not going to get into it now because this event is not about it, but it is in a space whereby there's an awful lot of conversation and some protests about the early childcare services, but it depends on which area of those services you work within. I presume there's still an interest and an appetite from people to get involved in or to upskill within this service area.
We definitely think so, Greg. We really do. This event is designed to shine that positive light over the sector and to, I suppose, allow an opportunity for people who are working in the sector or who would like to work in the sector or who have maybe previously worked in the sector to come together, to network, to ask questions. And you're right, there is a little bit of, a wee bit of an issue around recruitment across in places in Donegal, but nationally as well. But I suppose there has been a lot of growth. Early year services in Donegal have been expanding. You know, there's a high demand for the sector. So that in itself has created some of these recruitment issues as well. You know, there is movement within any sector, but we just find that really the amount of childcare services that are growing in response to the demand for childcare. You know, that has, and that's a really positive thing. There's, you know, there's a level of investment now in early years that we haven't had before. We have investment through the ERO in the rates of pay for early years workers. We have core funding, which is, you know, millions of euros towards supporting quality, high quality childcare. So we're kind of hoping that by pulling our resources together in one space and getting all of the early years students and providers and, you know, people who are maybe unemployed or just want to find out about the sector to come together at the event and get the information they need.
I mean, obviously, it's going to appeal to people already operating childcare services, those working within mm-hmm. those services or those interested in joining them. But if there are people who might want to establish a childcare service, for an example,
absolutely,
if they see a gap in the market in a particular area, will it be a worthwhile event for them to attend?
Absolutely. New services and existing services. So we ourselves will be there. The team from Donegal County Childcare Committee will also hoping to have other organisations that will come and have stands at the event as well, which will, you know, about supporting small businesses, about providing information for new startups, about expansions, about, you know, kind of anything that they want to know in relation to starting a business. And Childminders as well is an area of growth in Donegal, and anybody interested in that, we have our Childminder Development Officer who will be there on the day and answer all of the questions that any Childminders might have, whether they're thinking about it or, you know, they just want to find out a little bit more. More than welcome to come and chat with the Childminder Development Officer. We don't like to target, you know, the individuals maybe are reluctant to get back into the sector or who are not sure whether they want to do it or not. We will have the services themselves will be present, or a selection of services, and they can answer questions directly about, you know, the supports that they offer new entrants into the sector. We'll have the local Donegal ETD and ATU, so they'll be there as well, talking to students or, you know, anybody who wants to upskill or
well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is it nothing's easy in this life, of course, but is it doable to retrain or to pivot, or say, for instance, you left school 4 or 5 years ago with a leaving cert and you went into retail or something, or if you might have chosen to work, is it difficult to train up to work in this area, or are there pathways for it? You know, say, for instance, you didn't go on to third level, but now you're thinking, right, this is an area I could work in. Or maybe you've been working in a different industry and you think, this might suit me a little bit better. Is that doable? Is it possible? Is it very difficult?
It's not very difficult, Greg. It is something that would definitely encourage someone who's thinking about it and feels that this is the sector that would suit their needs and their personality to explore it. And as I said, ETB and ATU are best placed to support a student at any level, whether they are, you know, entry level or they already have a qualification that will allow them to, you know, to succeed in a higher level. Services also are there, and they can talk to potential employees, and it's about making that connection between the employers and employees and finding out and asking those questions about, well, what if I wanted to do A, B or C? And, you know, the services are really good at promoting that within their own teams and having, you know, a professional workforce that's graduate led is the end goal, I guess. And managers and childcare organisations really do provide many resources that the staff or employees may need to, you know, get themselves to that next level. But even at entry level, we will have, hopefully there at the event as well, the information around schemes and, you know, entering into employment schemes, the child sector, which is a great platform because you can study and be centre-based while you're going through those schemes. And once you've done it full cycle, you are then have the experience and the qualification you need to be employed in the sector.
All right, okay. So it's in the Clanry Hotel, Letterkenny, on Wednesday, the 12th of July. So it's a week this Wednesday, yeah, running from 2 p.m. to
That's
6
right.
p.m. Do people have to register in advance? I presume service providers, is it too late if they're seeking to advertise vacancies? Is it too late for them?
It's not too late, yeah. So we'll have a job board in place where we are advertising any vacancies that any service in the county has. So please get in touch with us if you want to advertise a vacancy. If you'd like to hold a stand at the event and meet the potential employees, then that's also an option. Then they can contact us for that as well. The stands are limited, so we don't have, you know, an unlimited amount of space. So if you are interested, my advice would be to get in touch sooner rather than later. info@donegalccc.com, or you can call us on 074-91-23442.
Okay, thanks, Amanda, for your time. Have a good day. Amanda Boyle there, Childcare Development Officer with the Donegal County Childcare Committee. All right, so we're going to be talking about a new documentary, Take Me Home. Its maker is Austin Kenny. He's going to be joining us after we take this break. Okay, joined on the programme now by Austin Kenny, a documentary maker. He's currently working on his next project, or one of them anyway, Take Me Home, TAPE. Good morning to you, Austin. Thanks for joining us.
How are you doing, Brian? Thanks for having me.
Good to have you on board here. Now, of course, it's clear. I think you have a Dublin accent, but you have Donegal connections, Austin. Run through them for us.
Yeah, yeah. Back in the 90s, my auntie used to live up there. Auntie and uncle has passed on since. You did a lot of work up there. We're actually not from Donegal, but you did a lot of work up there. He was a builder, and he was stationed up there, kind of building a school for a good few months. And then he was called back for a few times after. I actually watched the 92 All-Ireland final in up in Donegal.
Cool.
Which obviously was a losing one for a Dublin person. So I don't remember really from that, to be honest.
Yeah, it wouldn't be easy to forget. Okay, but anyway, so that's it. You've a bit of experience of Donegal, of course. Talk to us about the documentary you're currently working on, Austin.
It was something I made back in college about 10 years ago. It was based on cassette tapes that I found from when my mum and dad emigrated to Australia in the 70s. And it was just audio cassettes because my dad's family back in Offaly didn't have a phone back then. So they used to record their voices to audio cassette and post them back, you know, and they'd kind of say there was one phone in the town. So I'm sure there was probably a couple more, but there was one public phone. So they'd often record on the tapes and say, we're going to call you on this date at 4 p.m. or whatever. So they might organise a phone like that, or a phone call that way. But it just so many different memories caught up with that, from talking about new potatoes to newborn babies. And it's something we're trying to build on now. I'm working with a production company now to make something kind of a bigger, more national scope of it.
Yeah, it's quite innovative. How widespread was this type of communication, do you think, at the time?
Well, I think there would have been quite a lot. Like, it's particularly in rural Ireland, and that's why I kind of called it Highland Radio, because I thought, you know, particularly rural stations, and Donegal particularly had a lot of emigration, I know, even more so than a lot of counties in Ireland. I would think we're looking for contributors, and that's really kind of what I'm on. I would think there's a lot of people that were kind of affected in the same way, and that it's such a comparison to the communication you can do nowadays. But even anything to do with people that maybe had video recorders and sent them back as well, it all just creates a lovely emotive story. And something, it's pretty different to what you got over the phone.
And listening back to these tapes, how was it conversational? Had they put bullet points down and said, oh, I need to tell you about it? Because and we'll get to hear that presumably as once the documentary is released. But how did what form did these tapes take?
So it was kind of, yeah, it depended on the night. Sometimes there was they were just recording a bit of a sing song in the house, you know, maybe it might have been Saturday evening. There was a couple of drinks taken and people were kind of getting a bit in the mood for singing. And you'd hear somebody calling to the door and they'd go, you'll sing a song. And they'd come in and sing a song, or somebody would tell a story. The other days then they'd record an All-Ireland final and send it over the full match commentary. And then there was, on my mum and dad's side, who were over in Australia, they were kind of talking about stuff like, different, such a different thing, like talking about speedboats and things like that, you know, because that was something normal that people had in Australia then, you know, speedboats, and it was just such a foreign thing to compare to living on the Shannon in Offaly in the 70s, you know.
And I suppose with, and not in your family's case, but I'm saying generally, I suppose to some extent too, there's going to be a pattern in that, you know, people are going to say, you know, at home it's great, it's lovely, we're having the crack, you're missing it. And then for those out foreign, it's like, well, this is a new life, look what we have access to and all, you know, with no malice or whatever. But I suppose, you know, especially given the fact that there was a delay in between the tapes arriving and going back and forwards and what have you.
Yeah, like it was heartbreaking, and even playing the tapes from mum and dad back and vice versa from my aunties and uncles, it was heartbreaking thinking what they were missing out on, because I know particularly my mum didn't really want to go, you know, my dad left for work at the time and mum didn't really want to go, so she was really missing home more than him, and I'm trying not to let that on, I suppose, because it was such a long way away back then as well, you know, he couldn't fly back so easily, and there was very few. Mm. Well, there was a lot of Irish over there, but less connected than they are now. There wasn't Irish groups so much, and then I suppose that dad was conscious then of the life he was kind of having there compared to the life he couldn't get back home because the work was quite scarce in building him. So it's one of those ones. It's great to have, but yeah.
So in terms of contributors, what are you looking for? Are you looking for people with tapes? Are you looking for people who communicated using tapes, even if they don't currently have them? I mean, what, or are you casting the net even wider than that?
I'm kind of looking for particularly audio, like sound or video tapes particularly, just because that's kind of the angle we're going on in that. It would be great to talk to people who have some really good stories and maybe some photos of the time to back them up, but I'm kind of looking primarily for to make a sound or video landscape that we can put on the TV and then talk about the stories around it, particularly interesting stories or emotive stories. Like my brother was born over there, and that was kind of a particularly big story on the original original film I made back in college, and for anything like that kind of has. But then small stories are welcome, just as heartwarming, you know.
And I think it's also a way of seeing what material comes in and how it fits into just the storytelling, because that's what a documentary is, isn't it? It's about storytelling.
That's it. So I've got a couple of people at the moment who've sent me some nice things. It's weird because it's just working to see what we have, and then you kind of, as I say, you build a narrative then, so you might put all similar types of stories together, and then somebody followed by something else, or somebody says in Donegal might link to something else that somebody else said in Mayo or something like that. You know what I mean? It's all that kind of.
We're having a few messages in talking about, you know, people that are currently away. Now, obviously, you know, this is a different form of communication. People can video call and call at will, and it's all free on WhatsApp, whatever it might be. Yeah. So, like, are we talking about a time period, or are you looking for that comparison, or what's the story?
I suppose originally I was looking for something kind of emigration and communication in a bygone era and how it compares to now, but I wouldn't pin myself down completely to that, because I'd love to do the comparison from then and now as well.
Yeah, because I'm not really convinced. I don't know. And this is sort of just wondering. It's nothing to do with your documentary as such. Even though I think maybe the fact that you can get back and forwards a little bit easier, though it's still a struggle for most, might be different. But I don't know how sort of live video calls or live phone calls, if it makes it much better than it was with delayed tapes, if you know what I mean, because it still is impersonal. And even to some extent, it might make it a little bit more difficult, because you're ever constantly, regularly reminded of that separation and the gap. You know, I do wonder if it's in a perverse way, well, it's probably not a perverse way, but if it's a little bit more, even probably a bit more difficult for mums and dads at the moment.
Yeah, true. That's a good way of putting it, Greg, actually. Yeah. And also, if it's somewhere like Australia where there's a time difference as well, so it's a real upset, a good upset, but an upset to your day. Yeah. You can say, God, we've got this call at 11 o'clock and they're doing, you know, they might be heading out to work at that time over in Australia, and you know, it's 11 p.m. for you. So it's a real kind of, there's a break in what you're doing. And just, you know, you ever have that conversation with somebody and they're in a completely different mood or a buzz than you are at the time, and it just feels really strange. And and they talk about this on in the documentary I made, that it's so nice to hear the tape at your leisure and sit down and play it at your leisure and go and then think about, make notes on what you're going to write back or send back to them yourself, you know.
You wouldn't want to just leave every tape with a question. You'd be there all day waiting for answers. Okay, so just very finally then, there is an original documentary that you've already done. Someone sort of, this came across someone's desk presumably and thought, right, we can expand on that or we can develop that out. So can people listen to the original documentary and B, how do you want people to contact you if they've got some material that would fit into the conversation we've been having?
Yeah. Well, the original documentary is on YouTube. It's a video documentary. So it's actually don't have the exact link now, but I did send it to your producer.
Right. Okay. We can link that out. Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, I'd love to people to contact me on any particular way. Twitter. I'm Austin Kenny. That's AustinKenny. Just Austin Kenny One. The number one. And on Facebook and Instagram, I'm austin.kenny.75. There's a phone number as well, which I can leave with it.
We'll leave it with it. We'll not read it out. We have it. Okay, Austin, listen, thanks for that. Interesting stuff. And I'm sure you've evoked some memories for people as well in reminding them that such a thing might have happened. All right, take care. Yeah. Austin Kenny, their documentary maker, did you communicate in that way? Is it more difficult now? As I say, I'm supposing I'm not currently in that situation and I would find it quite difficult. I struggle with it, but many of you out there are. But I mean, is it, you know, that access, those videos calls, does it make it a little bit easier? I wonder. All right, we're going to finish up with some comments that have been coming in relation to the new road coming into Letterkenny. What's the purpose of the trees? Okay, that's a repeat of one we had earlier. I don't know. We're not able to answer that question because it's kind of subjective, isn't it? Hi, Greg. Who approves roadworks? Travelling Dunfanaghy to Letterkenny taking over an hour due to roadworks in three different locations on one road. I don't know. A caller says, is the GAA Senior Football Championship set up in such a way to have a Dublin Kerry final, or am I paranoid? Well, I don't know the ins and outs, but I think into the semis, the draws, it was decided that if teams had met before, they couldn't be paired again in the semis. Isn't that correct? So I don't know if that contributed to this theory that a Dublin-Kerry final had been created. I don't know. I'm not sure. You wouldn't rule anything in and out, but who's to say? Morning, Greg. Beach is closed. Look at Achadahore Beach. We've no access to our beach. We were in Lifford and none of the councillors stood for us. Only Ian McGarvey and Frank McBurty. I think I'm familiar with that case. All right. Is that another one of those which becoming more and more, we see more and more now. Is that a rights of way issue there, I wonder? I suspect it very well might be. I have a query regarding home help, says this listener. My mother's home care company have been working on a skeletal staff lately. They have requested family to help out. We're a very small family and aren't available at all times. My query is that because the company has a contract with the HSE, if they're unable to fulfil that contract, are they not obliged to ask the HSE to seek help from other agencies? So this is a company subcontracted by the HSE to offer home help. They're short on staff. They've asked the family to help out. The family aren't in a position to do so all of the time. And their question is this company not fulfilling its contract? And if so, are they not obliged to ask the HSE to seek help from other agencies? Any insights into that? Again, 086 60 25,000. My granddaughter was recently sick and her mum called NowDoc for an appointment. When the phone was answered by NowDoc and they heard the child, they said not to wait for an appointment and they called for an ambulance to come to our home, and today I got a bill for €100. Why am I paying this bill when they made the call as opposed to seeing and accessing the child first? Surely this charge is via them and not me, as my granddaughter has a medical card. That's a complicated one. Don't know how you'd get to the bottom of that one, but I think even if you call NowDoc, you're kind of giving over to them to make a medical decision. They called the ambulance. But if they did, should it be €100? Should it not be less? And also, the child's on a medical card. How is that factored in? I don't know the answer to that question. Greg, I have to ask as to why you label yourself when you query or question. You said today that you're not anti-establishment, which I'm not, just clarifying. And recently, you're not an extremist or a conspiracy theorist. Why do you feel the need to label yourself when you ask questions? Is that not part of the problem? Should we not question everything? I think we should. Yes, indeed. But you know yourself. Perhaps I do it too much, but it's no harm knowing again, clarifying your position, because people tune in and out, you know, and I don't believe I'm a particular shock jock, or I'm a, you know, I'm pretty much, I will keep it in mind. I appreciate your feedback. All right. I want to thank Donna Marie Doherty and Niamh working on the show today. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And just a reminder for you that Sean Doherty, Father Sean Doherty, will be joining us on the show tomorrow as well for his first live chat since being ordained into the priesthood. That and so much more besides. Don't miss it.